Good morning and welcome to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori on this Saturday morning, May 18, 2019. So glad you can join me where I am every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 Eastern Standard Time. And you can hear us from anywhere online at 883wppb.org and on podcasts everywhere. And each show is archived on my website at annliguori.com. I'm at the PGA Championship at Bethpage Black. And what a week it has been so far. And a lot of people are saying a new star has been born, but Brooks Koepka has been a star in my book for quite some time now. Koepka, the same guy who defended his U.S. Open title last June at Shinnecock, has the opportunity to defend the PGA Championship title this weekend, and what a feat that would be. This morning, we are going to talk about Brooks Koepka and Tiger Woods and the entire PGA Championship with the talented and versatile Frank Nabilo, who works with the Golf Channel and with CBS Sports. Nabilo was a former winner as a player on the PGA Tour, 15 titles he won, and then he became a broadcaster. And we're going to talk a little bit about his career as a broadcaster and talk about a lot of different issues with golf and with this PGA Championship. We're also going to visit with Reese Jones, the renowned golf course architect who has been tweaking Bethpage Black since before the course hosted the U.S. Open in 2002. He's come back every couple years and got it ready for this PGA Championship here. So we have quite the show lined up for you this morning. And boy, showing what a perfectionist Brooks Koepka is, he said in his press conference after the second round that he did not have his A game today. Can you believe it? He said he didn't have his A game today. He shot a 5-under-65, 7 birdies, 2 bogeys. Actually had his first bogey of the championship on the 10th hole in Friday's second round. But his 7-shot lead is a PGA Championship 36-hole scoring record. And his 12-under-128 total after 36 holes set a new record for a major championship. So he's just playing lights out. I've been a big Brooks Koepka fan for a long time. I just think his mental approach to the game is extraordinary. He doesn't let any clutter get in his head. He has found a way to block out all the distractions and to really just focus on the next shot. He played with Tiger Woods, and he beat him by a lot. Tiger did not even make the cut. Tiger shot a plus 373 on Friday, a plus 2 on Thursday. He missed the cut by 1 with a plus 5 overall for the championship. Tiger just wasn't himself. He looked like he was under the weather, and he made some references to that all week. And he missed his practice on Wednesday and actually said that he was feeling under the weather. So he said after he missed the cut on Friday, he said that once he starts feeling a little better, he'll get back up to speed. So he didn't say what was wrong with him, but he just didn't look 100% physically. And out there on the golf course, he missed fairways. He was off on the speed of his putts, and he just did not look himself. So he has missed the cut for, it's like the 9th missed cut in 76 major starts for Tiger Woods. So the current Masters champion, who everybody was expecting great things from here after he won his 5th green jacket, his 15th major title at the Masters in April, he will not be playing the weekend. So that was a huge shock to many people. But Brooks Koepka is not a shock. Brooks Koepka is as strong mentally and physically as you'll ever see, I think, in the game. He is going to be an incredible star, and he has stolen all the headlines here this week. At 12 under, he leads Jordan Spieth and Adam Scott by 7 shots, and I just can't imagine that he throws that lead away. He's been just playing so well. No nerves at all, it looks like. And he just said he's putting as great as can be. And he just says, you know, he just lines up the putt and then lets it go. And he makes these putts. And his approach shots have just been extraordinary. I mean, you know, just he's setting himself up for these putts within 8 feet. And he hasn't missed. And then he's, you know, had come up with some good par saves, too. So he's doing everything right, Brooks Koepka, and literally putting on a clinic. So this morning, we'll hear from Frank Nabilo of CBS Sports and the Golf Channel, and also from golf architect Reese Jones. Sports Interview with Allegory is brought to you in part by Peak Vision Sunglasses, PEAK Vision Sunglasses, zero distortion, patented dual zone lens technology. Learn more at peakvision.com. And by Dune Jewelry, that's D-U-N-E Jewelry, and My New Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course in timeless pieces for both men and women. DuneJewelry.com, that's D-U-N-E Jewelry.com, and the Hamptons Rope Collection. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Ann Liguori. I am at Bethpage Black for the PGA Championship, and I'm delighted to say good morning to Frank Nabilo from New Zealand, who is a Golf Channel CBS golf analyst, and really one of my favorite analysts, I have to say, Frank. You just do such a great job. You have a very conversational way about you, but God, you know your stuff, which is good. And I know you played. You were on tour and have 15 pro victories, and you finished in the top 10 in all the majors at one point in your career, and so you bring a lot of that knowledge to the game. Anyway, welcome to Sports Interview.
No, thanks, Ann. No, it was great. Yeah, I still miss playing, I think, like anybody would, but there's an obligation if you're going to be involved in the sport to try and put back. I was very fortunate, starting off, as you've already detailed, in New Zealand. I lived in London for nearly 12 years. Came over here, tried to play here. Things were going good. I got diagnosed with inflammatory polyarthritis. I knew that it's really like a death sentence for an athlete. And then I had no plan B, which I don't think you should, to be honest, initially, when you're going to play sports for a living. But then I had to realize very, very quickly that you better find out a plan B now. And here I am, like, chatting to you and being involved now on this side of the sport for nearly 17 years. So it's great.
And how did the transition happen from playing to broadcasting? What was your first break in broadcasting?
To be honest, it was I was doing a charity day for an event in Vermont. And I've completely airballed the play. He was dying of ALS. God, how am I going? It sounds terrible. I hadn't even thought about that. And Jeff Julian, and I was there, and I finished up actually playing with one of his sisters. It was a pretty emotional day, and Jeff couldn't speak at that particular stage, and I only sort of got to meet him a little bit during the course of that year. So I always struggle with those type of days, and I was playing, lo and behold, with a sister. She was crying a lot of the rounds for good reason. She knew her brother. The days were numbered, and I remember being in the car park out, afterwards, trying to, just get myself together to go back inside for the function. And believe it or not, it was Rich Lerner of all people. And he goes, hey, what's wrong? And I'm like, it's a tough day. Blah, blah, blah. I said I play with one of his sisters. Anyway, the conversation then changed. And he said, have you ever thought of TV? And I'm like, no, it's the last thing I'll ever do. And he said, well, you should give them a call. They're looking for people. So lo and behold, got a hold of my agent. One thing led to another. I know you know the name Bob Greenway. We were just talking before the interview about it. Met with Bob at Bay Hill. And the rest is history. Here I am now. Yeah.
And you have to understand that Rich Lerner worked with me at WFAN in the early days. So Rich and I go back way, way back. So you're in golf and as a broadcaster. And do you miss your playing days? Or does everything you do, because you do a variety of things for the Golf Channel and for CBS, does that satisfy you?
Great question. No is the easy answer. I think that's still my weakness in this industry, to be honest. I think you have to understand your weaknesses and your strengths. Now, I'll always feel like it's unfinished business, but in some respects, that still gives me the hunger to try and do a better job, to tell the story. But I know how hard the game is. It took me a while. I felt like I was robbed initially, so I fell out of love with the game. I felt angry, didn't want to have anything to do with it. So I guess in some respects, after a year, getting back into working and being involved was like therapeutic. And then after a while, I realized that, you know, I live in this great country here, for example. Still very fortunate. Things probably panned out better than what a young kid from New Zealand originally thought they were. And then all of a sudden, you know, the sun starts to shine a little brighter and you go, it's not so bad. And then I realized, I'm looking at Nota Begay right now on the TV screen here, and we had a similar chat, that it's a big opportunity. You're just different. And then you realize the obligation to try and represent a sport that gave you everything. You know, gave me where I live now, gave my lifestyle and all that, that it's still a great game. I just can't play it at the level I wish I could. That's all. And it's in the big scheme of things, it's not a bad thing. I was still lucky.
Right. But are there times when you see, you know, you're interviewing these guys and you're talking about these players, and are there times when your heart still breaks that it should be you out there that people should be interviewing?
I'd be lying if I said no. But yeah, initially it was like that, and that's why it was hard to do the job. I almost wanted to do it from an area where nobody could see and just cover the sport from obscurity in some respects. But you actually get over that. You do, because the game's changed. You know, when I first started playing the game, it was good. Yeah, it was play alongside the Tiger Woodses and the Freddie Couples, Davis Loves, even different generations, Jack Nicklaus. You know, I got fortunate to play with just about every great player I ever wanted to, and even the passing of the bat onto this generation. And now I'm actually proud of the generation now. They work so hard. It looks like a healthy sport. They are fit. They're strong. I know there's a debate on technology. That's a different answer, and I argue with a lot of my rider friends on that, because from 30,000 feet, the game looks like it's changed, and we can blame technology. But I said, like, you know, right now, without trying to be too sort of weird about it, you know, we're traveling at 1,000 miles an hour. The reason why I say that, that's the speed of the earth, right? But we're just having a chat. And the reason why I say that is these players, they don't really care about technology. If you have a better club than me, I'm going to try and get one as well. If you have a better golf ball, I'm going to try and get one as well. So they're worrying about the small incremental improvements they could make. That's why they're trying to be fitter, stronger, or employ these coaches. That you know, literally these, just a half a shot gap here and there. Meanwhile, we're worrying about all this big picture stuff, the golf ball, the clubs and all that. For them, that's just equipment. And so they're just trying to compete. And that part I like, because that's what I used to enjoy. The debates about the game and who's going to win and who's the greatest, that's what I do now. And I think some of them are ridiculous, to be honest. I think the biggest thing even for this week is just about who's going to win. Let it pan out. You know, it's going to start tomorrow on Thursday, and just let it pan out rather than predicting the winner and formulating an argument on why before they've even teed off. I think that's farcical.
Before we get to talking about this PGA Championship and this incredibly difficult Bethpage Black, I'm interested in the process, though, as a broadcaster. Is it anywhere near as challenging as it was playing, or do you find it really challenging in different ways?
I actually enjoy the challenge, Anne. You know, my goal now is not to see how I would play the golf course. I think that's where you let that part of your ego go, because, number one, I don't hit the ball as far as them. So for me, when you critique a shot, for example, Dustin Johnson and Zach Johnson, it's easy because they both have the same surname. They have radically different games. So if they're 250 yards away, that's nothing for Dustin Johnson. It's easy. It's probably only a 4-iron for him, you know, that's all it is. For Zach Johnson, it's nearly a 3-wood. So the challenge for those respective players is different. To do my job properly, I think you have to represent that to the audience and go, this is a tough shot for Zach. For Dustin, it's different. It's much easier. So that's what you have to do. You have to do your homework based on the challenges for those respective players that are on the screen or in contention that week. To me, that's the fun part of it. But to critique them the same, as in my opinion, is doing the job wrong.
But in golf, as a player, you had a coach. Who is your coach or your mentor in broadcasting to you know, help you be as good as you can be?
You glean along the way. The first host that I ever sat next to was Jim Kelly, who's a broadcaster in a lot of different events. He did everything from America's Cup to bowling, a bunch of other sports and golf. So I was just lucky that he was the first guy I sat next to, the first producer I ever worked with. Actually saw him this week, Keith Hirschland. You know, you get to work with the Tommy Roys, the Lance Barrows now. You get to work with the Jim Nances, Dan Hicks. Along the way, you glean. If you're not learning from the best, then there's something wrong. I remember sitting down with Billy Packer and asking him how he got ready for basketball. And Billy Packer was saying, you know, I analyze what, you know, which team should win and why and all that. I'm like, well, you know, it's really a waste of my time. That's not rocket science. And he goes, you know what the matchups are like, and I still think that's not rocket science. But the bit that was, and then when the game starts, I watch the ball. And I'm like, I got it now. I mean, it was so clever. And matter of fact, I thought of that at Augusta this year. I cover 11 and 12, amen corner. And in the end, just follow the ball. That's the story. That really is the story. Whether it's four out of five players hitting in the water on 12 this year with Tiger Woods, or whether it's the fact that Tiger Woods hits 9-iron and goes straight over that cross bunker. Just follow the action and then try and fill in some of the blanks. And it's fine to be quiet. Let the moment speak. So those things you glean, if you don't pick them up, you're going to get out of the industry extremely quickly. But look for the gaps. People want to know why. When somebody says something that you think is obvious but it's not, think about it. Think about why they said it. Maybe, you know, the devil's always in the details. Doesn't mean they all have to be explained. Connect the dots.
I like that. I mean, and obviously with your performances in the Masters, fourth, 96 Masters, tied for ninth U.S. Open, tied for 10th Open Championship, tied for eighth at the PGA back in 96. So you have to have a work ethic. You have to have kind of a routine in your head, knowing how to prepare to do the very best you can on the golf course. So does that translate over to your broadcasting career?
I'd like to think it does. Yeah, you get the squirrels in the head. You know, as a player, you're trying to keep your mind quiet. So as a broadcaster, you're trying to think, well, how are they keeping their mind quiet? You look for body language. You look for, you know, if somebody, I'll give you one example. Tiger Woods, and you'll see it this week when he's in trouble. When he has a trouble shot, look at his left hand. He'll tug the glove a little bit. He'll play with the left hand like he's an artist, like he's a left-handed artist. And then you watch him in the middle of the field. He won't do that. Chances are when he's in the middle of the field, he'll have one look. When he's in trouble, he'll look at the target twice. Now, believe me, that's not something I picked up. I looked at a guy called Scott Fawcett who does a system called Decade. You know, you surround yourself with brighter people that look for different things. It would be plagiarism for me to steal that. But it's like, you know, you're dead right. I look at it again. Rory McIlroy bouncing around here, you look for the smile when he's playing well. When he's playing poorly, he's what I call shoe buffing. The telltale signs. You know, when somebody hesitates with a big shot in mind, you go, why is he hesitating? Is it the scoreboard? Because he's one in front or one behind and realizes he has to go for a flag. Like I said, situational. You look for the little tells. I think that's the big thing. And like I said, the devil's always in the details. They don't all have to be explained, but you got to look for them.
This golf course, what makes it so very, very difficult?
It's like going out on a date. It really is. No, you everything's easy at first. Well, you're nervous. You get out there and it's you just do the little things. That's what the first and the second hole is here. It's just a gentle touch. That's all it is. No bunkers on the first two holes off the tee. They're right in front of you. And then just when you think you got it right, it just turns completely crazy. Yeah, from there on in, for about the next 15 holes, it'll give you everything you got. And then right at the end when you think you're done and you've been blown your cover, then they give you a relatively tricky 18th hole. If you can figure that out, then you've got round Bethpage Black. But yeah, it's wonderful. There's some nice changes of elevation. Kerry Haig's done a great job in giving an adequate fairway width of just a little more than 25 yards. That's a quarter of a football field, so it's still fairly spacious. Rough that's deep enough, but it's not chip-out rough. They hope to top it at about 3.5 inches. Believe me, that's plenty thick because it's lush. Greens that aren't overly firm, but they're firm enough, so if you don't hit a good shot, you're not going to hold them. And putting surfaces, to be honest, that are probably closer to an Open Championship in the sense that the greens aren't overly undulating. So the challenge is more tee to green here. It's just a great test. I would have loved to have played this golf course. When I was here last week doing advance work, I saw Tiger Woods on Wednesday, and he was surprised I hadn't played. I said, honestly, I never realized, you know, I've covered it from a distance, but I hadn't actually walked and specifically done just about each and every hole. I said, it's wonderful. He looked at me like he was surprised, like, of course it is. Yeah, of course it's a great course.
I can't believe you haven't played it. I also think just hitting, you know, uphill to so many of these greens and the undulation and the stamina that it's going to require in between the holes, you know, 4 days. I mean, obviously these guys are in shape, but somebody like Tiger, I asked that question of him when he was in the press conference Tuesday, how does stamina play into, you know, the whole picture here at Bethpage Black?
Professional golf, it's not just this week. When you look at the schedule this year, and that's why this year, to me, was always going to be intriguing. the fact that we have one big event every single month, you know, Players Championship, Masters, obviously the PGA Championship, and then we're going to go to the US Open, then we're going to have the Open Championship, but then we're going to have the FedEx Cup playoffs. You have one massive event every single month. So scheduling looks relatively easy, right? But then some guys like to play 3 weeks in a row, and maybe the second one is their best, or the first, or the third. So they're trying to figure that out. Some guys are 2 weeks. You know, some guys like to have a couple of weeks off in between. You can't. So trying to get it right. So, for example, Dustin Johnson came from 3 weeks off. Brooks Koepka played last week. Tiger Woods has had 4 weeks off. So there's three guys straight away, three different strategies. That alone is intriguing. Now, getting back to your question about being fit, yeah. So you've got to be fit enough to handle 6 months of some pretty strong golf. And then you're going to get periodically amongst, you know, sprinkled out at least once a month, you're going to get a really demanding golf course. And especially this week with the cold weather, wet, challenging, and people just think you're walking around 5 miles an hour, it's not that big a deal. But concentration, fitness, as soon as you fatigue, your brain starts to go. And maybe you slip up or just on one shot. Go back to the Masters. Three guys finished second, one behind. That's one shot in 72 holes. If that one mistake was caused through fatigue, then you're an idiot if you don't go to the gym and get fit, train better. And that's why, going back to technology, these guys realize the differences will come in the small things, about being fitter, holding their concentration, not panicking, not going for a reckless shot, even picking the right shot. All those little things, once again, devil's in the details. That's why these guys are working so hard now, because the gaps are smaller.
Tiger won the Masters, in my opinion, because of experience and smarts. Do you think he can do what he did in 2002, win the Masters, and win here at Bethpage Black 2 months later?
Logical question. One that I believe it or not, and I hate to answer, because I think it's a fairy tale. And I'm not saying fairy tales can't come true, but I think to explain what he's doing, you have to say no. And this sounds really, you know, it's a case where I want to be wrong, and I'm not trying to be right here. Like, a lot of people want to be right. They predict genius and whatever. But the truth is, the most amount of majors that anyone in the game has ever won after the age of 43 has won. So we're already asking him to do something that has never, ever been done before. Not by one, not by two, but he's got to do five. He's already done one of them, admittedly, to break Jack Nicklaus's record. And then on top of that, too, when you look at, you know, the last Masters he won was in 2005. 14 years have passed. And then when you look, every other major is double digits, gaps in between. So, but it's just that he's, you know, I've always, he's our Hulk Hogan, basically. He went from a hero to a villain to a hero again. But also, it's he reminds you, when people want to turn the clock back, we all want to be, I know I do, it was my birthday yesterday, believe it or not. And we all want to thank you, but I want to be 20 years younger. So when I think to Tiger Woods at his best, even when I was playing, and when I played with him, I remember playing with him in the 97 Open Championship with Justin Leonard won. He shot 64 that day. Still his lowest round ever he's ever shot in the Open Championship. So 20 years ago was a good memory for me. And I'm sure every Tiger Woods fan, when they think back to those halcyon years, they're younger, they have great memories. So part of that puzzle, what can he do and can he keep doing it, is because we all want to be youthful again and remember that, because it reminds us of how great it was, and maybe he didn't worry about bills or debts or whatever the case was. It brings back great memories. But if the really reason why my answer is complicated is, if he goes on to do it, don't cheapen the result. It is so unrealistic, and you have to say that, because if, and he's probably the only one that could, then it has to be put that way, because it's just truly remarkable. We're still debating whether it's the greatest comeback in sport. That's a debate at the moment. So if that's a debate, then getting four more, I don't know what you would call that. It would be a fairy tale come true.
And what's so great about it to me is we like him now. He's likable. He's likable because he totally transformed his personality. He's a nice guy. He wants to do well for his kids, be a good role model. He's friendly. He appreciates it because he knows it's like a miracle that physically he can function again after that fourth back fusion.
Well, I think that's what people were saying, why, but he hasn't played since the Masters. When I saw him last Wednesday, there actually is a sense of joy, and I'm not just saying that. And this one he really did enjoy. And I think because deep down, he obviously, even someone with as good a mind, I think he has a great mind for golf. I mean, that's the understatement of the year. I thought Jordan Spieth's mind was pretty damn good. But Woods, it's a computer up. It's a golfing computer, the way in which he strategizes a golf course. But even he doubted the fact that he could do it. But the other thing, as good as he is, now he got the job done, but he didn't predict even for himself what it was going to feel like. And I think when you actually saw the joy, I've never seen him celebrate that way. And really, when he put the pieces together, his kids were there. His kids hadn't seen that. And where it was, I think, you know, Nick Faldo and Jim Nance did a great job of just laying out. We'd never seen that sort of joy. It was a response to all those years, to being a villain for a while. And so that's why, in my opinion, he had the month off. I don't even know it's still being totally digested. I know he wants to put the game face on. Then he gets the Medal of Freedom. I mean, there was a lot to happen in anyone's life in a month. But, yeah, it was pure joy. There was nothing fake about that. But I listened to, you know, the TV network that he's part of now, and he detailed that back nine. If you actually get there and listen to it, he is so aware of every single that happened over those last 2 hours. I found that fascinating. His mind, his recollection is amazing.
Talk about calculations. I don't think he even calculated, any of us calculated, just the emotional toll it would take. And I think he needed the break between the Masters and this event more for, you know, his mental state than physical. Because I just think what he did was just exhausting and joyful and you know, exhausting in many ways.
The demands on it. Say, for example, he had played last week or Quail Hill 2 weeks ago and didn't win. It even puts a downer on the expectations this week. The fact that he hasn't played for a month is the reason why everybody's making him the favorite this week, and they're so gung-ho for a repeat performance. They were greedy again. You know, he delivered at such a rate. You know, he's played 75 majors as a professional. Obviously, he played some, but 75 as a professional. He's won 15. You know, that's a 1 in 5. 20% win rate. That is unheard of in our sport. This is golf, not tennis, not football, not basketball. You don't win at that rate. And so now we're, like, you know, salivating at what can happen, and we're dreaming unrealistic dreams. Once again, as I said, it's unrealistic for anybody. Should he go on and do it? You have to put it that way to explain how great it would be.
Let's move to Brooks Koepka, because to me, there's no more fascinating mindset in the game than Brooks Koepka. I'm fascinated by the way he thinks. Just trying to get inside that head, because I just think he's probably the most, aside from Tiger perhaps, he's probably the most mentally tough guy out there. Do you agree?
No, I do. He's the assassin, as I would call him out there. Also, he's prepared to be the spoiler. And I do think, going back to, you got to go back 12 months ago. Obviously, he's defended the US Open. That hadn't been done since Curtis Strange, a really tough customer. And he had to do it by playing alongside his good friend Dustin Johnson. That was tough, but it was no problem. It's like, hey, we're friends, but I'm sorry, not for the next 4.5 hours. I have no qualms in beating you, beating his best friend. So that was put aside, and everyone's going, well, that's great, you know, 2 US Opens, and then you go on to Val Reeve, and then all of a sudden Woods is in the mix. And I remember I was on the call. Woods hadn't had a fairway in 9 holes. He was making everything. And the crowd believed in it. They want him to win. So now not only is he trying to beat the field, he's also trying to beat Tiger Woods now in history, and he's trying to beat the people's champion. That's what it was. That scene on 18 when Woods finished was incredible. So Woods shoots 64, which I think is his lowest ever closing round in a major championship. And Brooks Koepka took a leaf out of Woods' book and was clinical. The finish was clinical. The 4-iron he hit into 16, actually the 15th hole was great. I was there when Tiger Woods hit it to a foot. I couldn't get a word out, because the ovation, I mean, they just lit up like they believed he could win. So it took something special to beat Woods, beat the field, beat the crowd, and win a major championship. So you're dead right. He was such a cool customer. And then even going into Augusta, and Woods himself talks about it after Koepka hit it in the water, along with Molinari and Finau. He was still focused on Koepka, and he was the one guy that he knew could bounce back. And Koepka did. I think he eagled the 13th hole the very next hole. But so when a player like Woods is very wary of you, you know you're good. But he seems to be a man for the time. So we got our hero back, and we got our villain back. So hey, this is the trilogy now, you know. Koepka gets Woods at the PGA Championship. Woods gets Koepka at the Masters. So we got to, hey, it's one all, basically. That's the way I look at it.
Your comrade at the Golf Channel, I love Chamblee, but how could he keep Brooks out of that comment about who he thinks, you know, can win a major? I mean, you know, he said DJ, he said Rory, he said Tiger. He did not mention Brooks Koepka. Do they have a little tiff going on, or how can you not mention Brooks Koepka?
Brendel's a smart guy. I know sometimes he takes a different point of view. You know, that one that's a question for him, obviously. I don't know if it's personal or what, but, and obviously he still doubled down on that. You have to respect somebody else's opinion. I don't get that. A lot of other people in the industry don't get that. So whether it is personal, like I said, only he could understand, only he could argue that. But, and you can always pick holes in anyone's argument. We talk about, winning majors as a determiner of success at a young age. Well, then the flip side of that is, you know, Ben Hogan. He won them late in his career. So there's holes in everybody's arguments, probably including my own. But, not probably, most definitely then. But, yeah, it's just a tough one. I guess the fact that you could argue, too, on the fact that because he's brought it to a head, then actually a lot more people have jumped on Brooks's side as well. So it's in the big scheme of things, I like to think, though, we do the job differently. But it's about performance and who wins this week and why. Otherwise, to me, it's all the stuff they do in boxing fights now. The tiffs and the bat check and all that they do before the fight. But in the end, is it a good fight or not? So I want to see what I saw in Belle Reve last year, and I want to see what I saw at Augusta. That's what's more important. And I think now Brooks wants to do the same, Tiger Woods wants to do, and the rest of the field, they want in on it as well. So that's what makes this week so great.
Two last questions, Frank. Is this the best time in the history of golf, perhaps, to cover the sport? I mean, based on all the stories and obviously Tiger's resurgence and you didn't maybe cover golf when Jack was playing. You came after that, right?
No,
Jack Nicklaus, you played with Jack. So you came after that time. But, I mean, I can't think of a better time, really, to cover the sport.
I can't. I would rephrase that. I can't think of a more important time because our game it's healthy in some respects. I think we have a great influx of youth at the highest level. That class of 2011 was special, Koepka being one of that. Also, the fact that, you know, even little known fact, Brooks Koepka and Jordan Spieth both went to the same Q school. They both failed on second stage. So they didn't get through. Brooks went to Europe, cut his teeth over there, won four times on the equivalent of the web.com. They call it the Challenge Tour. So he went the hard way. Jordan got the sponsors exemptions. The rest is history. You got Justin Thomas, Daniel Berger. I mean, there's a bunch of guys, Shoffley, all from that era. We've retooled the game with talent-wise so well. Now we have our star back in it. Not to dismiss Mickelson, still heavily involved. So yeah, at the higher echelon of the game, it's great, but we have problems. Participation. We need more people. So right now we look at the game healthy. I'm glad we've come to a public venue. That's a topic for tonight. Believe it or not, public golf courses. We need more of them. We need more influx. Somehow we got to convince our kids and our youth that 5 hours out there, which some people say is a long time, is actually healthy for you. It's an outdoor sport. You're going to learn a lot about yourself. You're going to play with older people. You're going to learn respect. You're going to learn about other things. You're going to learn how to compete without, running home to mum and dad and crying. You know, you learn all the right things. It teaches you a lot of good things that you learn about yourself. You can speed up your growth. So
hopefully you're going to keep your cell phones out of the golf cart for 5 hours.
Yeah, you learn. I've always thought I was lucky. I played a lot of sport when I was a kid. We've got to get our kids outside. Number one, it's got to be safe outside too for them, but it's a healthy lifestyle. You're not going to always have this opportunity. So, like I said, it's a very important part of the time in golf for a multitude of reasons.
Last question. So many magical moments in your broadcasting career. Can you pinpoint one?
I'm going to single one, not because it was a highlight of my career, more because I learned. I got to do, I'm very lucky to do Amen Corner now. I get to work for Golf Channel and NBC, NBC Golf Channel and CBS. And it was about being not prepared. And I knew that as a player, making a mistake. But I was double dipping, as we say. I was doing 11, 12, and then going back to my Golf Channel duties in the evening. And Jordan Spieth looked like he was going to win his second Masters. And I never thought that it was going to come down to that hole, 12th hole. when he made, you know, quadruple bogey. And Danny Willett went on to win. So I learned a lot about the sport then, how fickle it is at that particular point, how it looked like that was a shoe-in, he was going to win. Everybody was thinking about all the things that, you know, how good it was. He's, you know, won two, could have won three, and then one foul swing, and the whole world changes, the whole game, the whole event changes. And as a broadcaster, too, just about not being prepared for what could happen. That's all. It's not. It wasn't like a major train. It's not like I said anything really bad, but I thought I'd done my homework, and I realized you got to do more. That's really what it is. So my best moment really is, hey, you got to work harder. Yeah.
Wow. That tells me a lot about you, Frank Nebolo. And you know, Danny Willett, who was prepared for Danny Willett? But your most magical moment. All right. I love it. Well, thank you so much for spending time. I really appreciate the time, and all the best, and continued success.
Thank you very much, Anne. It's been a pleasure.
Sports Interview with Anne Liguori is brought to you in part by Peak Vision Sunglasses, PEAK Vision Sunglasses, zero distortion, patented dual zone lens technology. Learn more at peakvision.com. And by Dune Jewelry, that's D-U-N-E Jewelry, and my new Hamptons Rope Collection. Savor the memories with sand from your favorite beach or golf course in timeless pieces for both men and women. DuneJewelry.com, that's D-U-N-E Jewelry.com, and the Hamptons Rope Collection. Welcome back to Sports Interview with Anne Liguori. My guest, legendary golf course architect, Reese Jones, the Open Doctor. I love that nickname, Reese. Having redesigned 9 PGA courses, 7 U.S. Open courses, 6 Ryder Cup courses, and the Tour Championship, and just continues on here. You're like the Energizer Bunny. You never stop. Welcome to Sports Interview, Reese Jones.
Well, in golf course architecture, it's the experience that counts. And I think when you do one good one, then they hire you to do another one. And that's what's happened in my career. It's been great.
It has been great. And before we get to Bethpage Black, you've done a lot on the east end of Long Island.
Yes. I first redid Montauk when I worked for my father, Robert Trent Jones. And then I did Atlantic and the bridge and a little course across the way called Three Ponds Farm.
Three Ponds Farm. I've never played Three Ponds Farm. Could you kind of help me in that capacity?
I think I will. I mean, I'm I think member number one still, so I think I can get you on. It's a private course with only 4 greens, but it plays 18 holes.
I have heard so much about it. I just don't know why I've never played it, but maybe that will change now. Anyway, we're at Bethpage Black for the 101 PGA Championship. And, Reese, you and your team came in here back in 98 to restore Bethpage Black for the 2002 U.S. Open and then again 2009 and now this PGA Championship. So, and you've been doing a lot of restorations ever since. It just doesn't stop, you know, when you come in 98. So, first of all, tell us what you did back then and what kind of shape was Bethpage Black in when you came here in 98?
Well, I first came here on May 1st, 1995, with the USGA and all their staff to determine whether or not Bethpage was suitable to host their national championship. We determined it was, but it was really in very, very bad shape. There are trees growing in the bunkers. Some bunkers have been eliminated. The grass lines were gone. There's a lot of bare dirt. The greens were not in good shape. The bunkers had footprints that were 6 foot deep, and a lot had to be done, so the USGA basically funded the restoration of Bethpage Black.
Were you just shocked when you saw the condition, or you figured, well, you know, it's a public course, and nobody was really paying too much attention to it?
It was a public golf course, but they still had a full complement of players. People still wanted to play it because it was known to be one of the hardest golf courses in the world, and people came to test their game against that type of a golf course.
What was your mentality when you saw how difficult the natural layout was, the Tillinghast design, back in the 30s? So what was your natural, your initial thoughts when you first saw it?
Well, we all came to the conclusion that it had the bones and the space between the holes and the places where you could have hospitality, parking, transportation, hotels, it had every element that could host a major championship. It's just the golf course had to be restored back to its former glory.
And so when you started restoring it in 98, did you think about adding to its difficulty?
We did. We had to add yardage because the ball was even going farther then. We've added yardage since then because the ball has continued to go farther and the players are hitting it so far off the tee. We added bunkers since then, but for the most part, we rebuilt all the bunkers. We brought them back the style, the Tillinghast style. We added yardage. We changed the fairway lines. We created chipping areas. We added to some greens. A lot of parts of the greens have been lost, and that's what happens in restoration. And for the most part, we just turned the whole course around and helped the whole park.
Yeah, certainly you made it a lot tougher then.
Well, it was one of the toughest golf courses already. To some degree, it might be easier because now you weren't in a one-foot-deep footprint in a bunker. It's been extremely well-conditioned. Andrew Wilson is the superintendent. Mike Hadley is doing it. And they have it. I think the pros this week are absolutely astounded, considering that we're just coming out of the winter, what great shape it's in. And it's a credit to the state, and it's a credit to the park.
Absolutely, but you're saying you kind of altered the angles a little bit, which made it much more tricky. It's already tough because, you know, narrow fairways, the rough is always, you have to be so dead accurate off the tee. Then the approach shots, because of the undulation of this golf course, a lot of times you're hitting, you know, up to a small green, which you really can't see perhaps the pin placement.
Well, this golf course was designed in the 1930s. If you look at it, Tillinghast kind of routed it on a massive piece of land. I mean, there's a lot of space between the holes, a lot of land he didn't use. He used the optimum land to build natural classic golf holes. And as you just said, Ann, there's a lot of naturally elevated greens, which makes it harder for the best players of the game. And they're fortified by very severe deep bunkers. So it's an aerial game that has to be played by the players. That's the only game they play today anyway. So it's perfectly appropriate for the PGA Championship this week.
Is it more important for these guys to hit long off the tee or more accurate off the tee?
Well, they hit long off the tee anyway, but they have to keep it on the fairway. Tiger Woods is the only player that's under par out of the first cut of the rough of any player on the tour. The rest of them really can't stop the ball like they can if it's off the tightly mowed fairway. Now that they're hitting so far and they're hitting into the greens with shorter clubs, they've got to hit in the fairway because they want to stop it on a dime next to the flag because they're going for the flag now in most cases. Or they're determining when they're tucked left or right which side of the hole to kind of favor because they always have a dispersion rate. But anyway, I think that length does help because it allows them to spin the ball and stop on a dime and get close to the flag. If they miss it offline because they hit it farther offline, they hit it farther offline now because they're hitting it so far, then they get in trouble with the first cut, which is an inch and a half. The second cut is 3 to 4 inches. And then the high fescue is looming on the outside of that.
So do you think, Reese, this is playing almost more like a U.S. Open layout because it's so difficult? You have to be just dead on everything, whether it's your tee shots, accuracy, short irons, long irons, you know, your chipping, short game, your putting. I mean, it just seems like it's going to test every ounce of one's game out there.
This setup is really what the PGI, Belle Reve had it last year. It's the same setup. We redid Belle Reve completely also, and the setup is much the same every year. The USGA is going to these wider fairways and sort of a very, very difficult rough off the closely mowed area, more chipping areas. So, but I think this is going back to the U.S. Open setup of 2002 and not the graduated rough setup that this course had in 2009. So this setup is the same width of the fairways, 24 to 28 yards wide, and then the same cut. The first cut is an inch and a half. The next cut's 3 to 4 inches, and then you go to the high rough. So it really is going to look just like 2002.
So of all these courses that you're so familiar with, can you say there's the toughest, you know, challenge in golf? Would this be in maybe your top five?
I think it would be in the top five, and I think in the world of golf they believe that. And the one thing that no pro complains about this golf course, because they get what they deserve, the greens are subtle, but because they're push-up greens built out of the native soil, there's a lot of little pockets in them from the age of the greens. So they, when they get the high speeds, sometimes they break in a way that the pros don't think they're going to. But they're not that severe, so it's not as important to be on the right part of the green as it is on other golf courses like Augusta National that have a lot of contour in the greens. However, there are a couple of greens like 17 and 15 where you have to be in the right portion of the green.
I think it's going to be so fascinating because there's so many great players. There's so much depth in the game, and there's so many great players who could win here. What are your thoughts about which players should do well here?
Well, I think they have to hit it down the middle just to be able to hit the shot, that high shot that stops. And I would love to see Tiger win because it would be great for the game of golf. In fact, I was on the Today Show in 2002, predicting that Tiger would win with Al Roker interviewed me, and it came true, and it was very good for the game, and it was great that a person who grew up on a public golf course won on the first publicly owned golf course ever to host a major championship. So it would be great for the game if Tiger won here and continued his quest to really bring his game back.
And back in 2002, he had won the Masters and then went out and won the U.S. Open at Bethpage. The same scenario here, although it's the PGA Championship, having won the Masters this past April. And Tiger, a lot of people are picking Tiger. The stamina is so important here. And I talked to Tiger about this in his press conference on Tuesday. I asked him how much, you know, will stamina be a key here? And he said it will be because of the distance, you know, between a lot of the holes. And because of the undulation, and after four grueling days, stamina is going to be a key issue. You have to be in shape and ready for it, both physically and mentally.
I agree with that, but I think he's very fortunate it's being held in May because it's a lot cooler. The heat isn't going to take the energy out of him. I think it's a lot harder to play a tough golf course when it's hot, and it's a lot harder to play when you start going south on that golf course in the heat. I think the fact that it's in cool conditions or cooler conditions really benefits Tiger Woods.
But it makes it longer, Reese Jones. And, you know, Tiger obviously has the distance, maybe not as much as some of these young guns, but it should play longer than 7,400 yards, don't you think, because of the wetness and because of the coolness.
It makes it longer, but they talk about this course being so long. That may be true, but there's holes like 1 and 2 and 6 that are really short par fours. Then you get the middle of the course, 10, 11, 12, that are really strong, long holes with elevated greens and hard greens to reach. Then you have 14 and 13 that are really birdie holes, and 18 is a short hole too. So it isn't every hole isn't long. It's got an ebb and flow to it. Tiger's going to hold his own on the long holes and make birdies on the birdieable holes.
Are you picking Tiger to win at all?
Well, I'd like Tiger to win. You never know. I think this course suits the longer hitter, as has been said. But I still think he's hitting it long enough off the tee to prevail.
Okay. I'm going to go with Brooks Koepka. I think Brooks has it all. Incredible physical game and all the shots. And mentally, I just don't think there's anybody stronger other than Tiger Woods.
Well, I agree with that. If Brooks Koepka hadn't played in the PGA at Belle Reve last year because he'd been out injured, Tiger would have won his major there. I think what makes Brooks so great, you're absolutely right, his mental approach to the game, nothing seems to faze him, and he's a great putter. But I think in major championships, it really does help to have a lot of experience. I think that's how Tiger won the Masters, because he didn't go for the pin on 12. He played between the bunkers. He knew where to hit it on 16. He knew how to get himself home on 18, and that's all the experience. And I think having played here twice before and knowing this golf course and liking it, I think he's got a very good chance.
Awesome. Reese Jones picking Tiger. And I guess, you know, before April, that to me would have been maybe a surprise pick. But now, I mean, the sky continues to be the limit for Tiger Woods because, you know, what I love about him now is that, A, he's a different person. He, you know, mentally, he's friendlier. You know, he's more outgoing. He's more personable. He wants to be a better father. But physically, he has to re-strategize his entire approach to the game, you know, with the practice sessions and with less tournament play, because he's 43, And, you know, he can't go all out with the driver anymore. So, you know, it's interesting how the other day he was really talking about how he's really changed his entire approach. He hasn't played one tournament between the Masters and this PGA Championship.
Well, Tiger does like courses that I've redone. He won a Cog Hill. He won a Medina. He won a Torrey Pines. He won last year at Eastlake, but I completely redid for the Tour Championship. He won here at Bethpage. And he's won a lot of my golf courses, and he likes them. And he's very positive about the fact that I create definition for him. He can actually visualize the shot, and then when he hits the shot that he tries to hit, he gets rewarded for it rather than penalized like he does in some other cases.
If you had to describe, Reese, your characteristics as a designer, what would it be?
I'd say shot options and making the golfer think. It's harder to create shot options now because all these best players play an aerial game. They don't play the ground game anymore. They're much more accurate with the aerial game. But I think what I like is have them have opportunities to play away from the hole and not be penalized, play at the hole, not be over-penalized by peeling the green too far over the sides or making it too tight for these chipping areas that take you to a lot of junk. I think it's my courses, as they're set up, are fair, challenging but tough for U.S. Opens and PGAs.
I love it. And you started, boy, on your own back in the 70s. You told me earlier your first course was Arcadian Shores in Myrtle Beach, and it got such raving reviews right out of the gate. Was it hard to kind of break away from the family design business and go on your own?
It was hard, but getting the country club job at Brookline really catapulted me into the major championship venues, and I think the fact that Curtis Strange, who was the number one ranked player in the game at that time, won that, and it was so successful that it helped me get all these championship jobs again.
So wait, what's the ultimate job for you, Reese Jones, that you haven't done? You've done so much. Is there any one job that you haven't done?
Well, there's a lot of jobs that I haven't done.
That you'd like to do?
Well, I would love to probably do a tournament course across the pond and get that ready because I've played a lot of golf over there and I revere a lot of the designs. And a lot of those characteristics came here to America, brought back by Bobby Jones at Augusta. So that would be kind of a nice thing to do.
Any one particular country?
No, I take whatever I get.
But I don't know if you want to say this, but what would you enjoy? Ireland, Scotland, Wales? I mean, where would you like to see your first design over the pond?
Well, that's a good. I'd like to have the first British Open or Open, as they say, in Wales, because Reese Jones is as Welsh a name as you get.
I love it. Well, you do well anywhere, in the Hamptons, on the east end of Long Island, all across the country here in Long Island, and with Bethpage Black. Well, I'm sure it's going to be an exciting weekend of golf. And, Reese, it's really not a major unless you're here and a part of it. So it's so good to catch up with you, and continued success.
Thank you very much, Ann.
Thank you. My thanks to Frank Nabilo of CBS Sports and the Golf Channel. My thanks to Reese Jones, renowned architect, and to Kyle Lynch in the studio. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody. Enjoy the PGA Championship. And I will talk to you next Saturday morning right here from 9 to 10 on Sports Interview with Ann Liguori.